You have a book out, Jesus Plus Nothing Equals Everything.
Yep.
And I don't know what that means. Can you give me the short version of that?
Well, it's the equation that set me free during the darkest season of my life, which was 2009.
Why was it the darkest season of your life?
That was the year that the church I had planted 5 years earlier merged with Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church, which is a well-known
Dr. D. James Kennedy's
church. Yep. He founded that church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which is, I'm a native of South Florida. He founded that church in 1959. He died in 2007. The church was in the unique position of looking for a pastor for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they came to me. I was pastoring a church that I had planted a few years earlier, and they had come to me and asked if I would be interested.
Did they not like Dr. Kennedy and they wanted to go for the polar opposite? Because you are nothing.
That's what I wondered.
Right, you are nothing like...
Yeah, I mean, we have Dr. Kennedy and I certainly... He's a longtime friend of the family, so there was some history there.
Okay.
Westminster Academy is part of Coral Ridge, and I went to school there, and my brothers and sisters went to school there, and so my grandfather actually dedicated that building in 1974 when it was brand new.
Your grandfather is Billy Graham.
Yep, okay. Yep. And when I was 18 months old, and that building that we currently worship in at Coral Ridge, big building on Federal Highway, US 1 in Fort Lauderdale, when it was brand new, my granddad actually came and preached the dedication service.
Wow.
Which is just kind of a cool thing when you think about it.
So you had some history.
Some history.
Stylistically
very different. No, yeah. Completely different stylistically. We have similar theological convictions, philosophical convictions, but stylistically very, very different. And he also grew up at a time, or was sort of coming into his own at a time that was much more politically charged inside the church.
Mm-hmm.
Than the generation I grew up with, so there was that difference too. But Coral Ridge had been in decline for about 10 years, and it needed a big change.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody was ready for it, but some people with some real foresight said, if this is going to work, we need to do something unconventional. In any event, when they came to me, I said no. I said, I'm honored, I'm interested, but I'm not. I mean, I'm honored and I'm humbled, but I'm not interested. They came back to me about 3 months later and asked again, and I said, again, I'm honored, I'm humbled, but I'm not interested. And, of course, we know all of the stories about the guys who follow founding pastors. You know, they
sure.
get chewed up and spit out in 6 months. And,
sure.
You know, they refer to those guys as the sacrificial lambs, and I wasn't willing to volunteer. And God was doing great things in and through the church that I had planted just 5 years earlier. So they came back about 5 months later, a third time, and that's when we started talking about the possibility of merging the two churches. We knew it was going to be hard. If this is, in fact, what God wanted us to do, it was going to be hard. It was going to be an uphill battle. I didn't want to do it, but we went through a four-month due diligence process where a team of people from Coral Ridge and a team of people from New City, which was the church that I had planted, met together along with me for 4 months, once a week, and we went through everything. And at the conclusion of that time, it was obvious that this is what God wanted us to do. And so on Easter Sunday of 2009, we came together as one new church, and it was great and celebratory, and I thought for one terribly naive second that this might not be that hard after all.
Mm.
And that lasted about 10 days, and then all the fireworks that we anticipated started going off.
Mm.
I mean, you try to merge businesses, you try to merge families, certainly churches. You know it's going to be hard. I felt like the father of a blended family. These people were used to this, and these people were used to that, and there was fighting, and there were people attacking me. And so I was at the absolute end of myself in June of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping, because my family's well-known, and the church is well-known. The press picked up on what was going on,
yeah.
So it was embarrassing, it was shameful. There were a lot of things being said about me that weren't true, but nobody would have known that they're not true if they're just reading it in the paper.
Right.
So it was just a horrible, horrible time. It felt like the flesh was being stripped off my bones. And I went on vacation with my family. We go on vacation at the end of June every year. And we go to the southwest coast of Florida. And we rent a place on the beach. And I was first morning of vacation. I get up, grab my Bible, grab a cup of coffee, go out to the balcony of the place we rented, looking at the Gulf of Mexico. And I let God have it. I mean, I finally just exploded. And I just said, you've ruined my life. I mean, what have you done? And I very self-righteously declared to him, because I've done everything you asked me to do, you owe me better than this. It's like the older brother of the parable of the prodigal son. I've served you all these years. I deserve a party.
Mm.
And I said, you can fix this, though. Just give me my old life back. And God very clearly through Colossians chapter 1 said, it's not so much your old life you want back, it's your old idols you want back, and I love you too much to give them to you.
Ouch.
And I realized at that point that for a long, long time, unconsciously, I had depended on human approval and human acceptance to make me feel like I mattered, mm-hmm. to invest my life with worth and value and to make me feel significant and secure. And now I was in the unique position of not having human approval and human acceptance.
Yeah. Hang on there for a second.
Yeah.
A lot of people live there.
Everybody does. I would make the case that everybody does, whether they're conscious of it or not. It's impossible not to. I mean, we're created and designed for acceptance and approval. That's not the bad part. The bad part is when we seek to satisfy our longing for acceptance and approval in something smaller than Jesus. And that's what I was doing unconsciously.
Even in a church.
Even in a church, even as a pastor,
yeah.
A Christian. And so what God sweetly reminded me of, sweetly and strongly reminded me of during that time was that all of the acceptance, all of the approval, all of the affection that I was looking for and longing for, I already possessed in Christ. That Jesus came to secure for me the ultimate approval, the ultimate acceptance, the ultimate worth and value and significance and all of those things. So now what it did is it completely set me free, because now I no longer needed the approval and acceptance of others, because all the approval and acceptance I longed for I already had in Christ. And that liberated me. It didn't change my circumstances. For the next 6 months, the circumstances were really, really rough.
The storm continued, but
it got worse.
You had a peace.
I had a peace and a freedom that enabled me to go back as a different kind of leader, a different kind of preacher, a different kind of person, father, husband, all that sort of stuff. And so for me, it was during the summer of 2009 that I rediscovered what I call in the book the now power of the gospel. I think a lot of people inside the church think the gospel is for those people outside the church. It's for non-Christians. And then once God saves us, he moves us beyond the gospel into something different. And yet what I discovered is that we never outgrow our desperate need for Christ's finished work on our behalf. Martin Luther said, I have to preach the gospel to myself every day because I forget it every day.
And what specifically, we refer to the first four books of the New Testament as the Gospels.
Gospels, yeah.
And we hear the phrase the gospel truth. How do you find the gospel when you say it in that context?
I mean, gospel means good news, and it's good news about what Jesus Christ has accomplished for sinners like you and me. Okay. By his life, with his death, and with his resurrection, his law-fulfilling life, his death-defeating death, and his resurrection, which promises that one day all things will be made new. And so, by his life and with his death and resurrection, he secured for us things like approval, validation. I mean, so many of us spend our lives trying to make something of ourselves, trying to generate worth and value and try to get somewhere and be someone and all of those things. And it becomes functionally justification by works.
Yeah.
It becomes, I have to justify myself. And any time we live our lives trying to justify ourselves, it leads to terrible bondage and slavery. I mean, I was enslaved. When I wasn't getting the approval and affection and acceptance from these people, I felt like the flesh was being ripped off of my bones. And it wasn't because my circumstances were rough. It was because for so long I had been leaning on those things to provide for me what only Jesus can provide.
In a sense, your flesh was getting ripped off.
It was getting, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I was being killed. Yeah. God was killing me and making me alive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the book's all about.
And that's what you're all about, preaching the gospel to yourself and to your church members?
Yeah.
Where can people, if someone wants to maybe listen to one of your sermons, can they keep up with you online?
Yeah, they can. I mean, all my sermons are on iTunes. They just either look up Coral Ridge or my name, Tullian Chivijan, which is easy to spell.
We'll put it on the screen.
Yeah, that's good. Please do. The church website, www.crpc.org.
Do Presbyterians just welcome? Forgive me. I think of Presbyterians as typically wearing choir robes and
preaching
very calm, sedate sermons.
Yeah.
I don't see you doing that.
Yeah, no, I'm a little sort of breaking the mold a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I grew up Baptist. Maybe that has something to do with
it.
But
no.
Baptists are typically...
I grew up Baptist. Yeah. You don't strike me as a Baptist. Oh, typical Southern Baptist.
Yeah. No, well, I am because this specific message saved my life.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I want to say to people for the rest of my life. I mean, it really is, what I've discovered is it really is the only thing sinners need to hear. And when I say sinners, I'm not talking about
people outside the church.
I'm talking about we remain sinners even after God saves us. And since the gospel has always been the only antidote to sin, Christians need the gospel just as much after they're saved as they did before. And we've lost that. We've come to believe the gospel is the ABCs of Christianity. The Bible teaches us it's the A to Z of Christianity. We never outgrow our need for Christ's finished work. And so reflecting on what Christ has done, and specifically what he accomplished and secured for sinners like you and me, and how what he secured and accomplished for us empowers us here and now to face life's challenges. I mean, I'll give you an example. This becomes really practical, so it's not just ethereal. I love receiving affection and love from my wife and three children. I mean, when I come home and my kids are happy to see me, my wife's happy to see me, I love that.
Sure.
But I've come to the liberating realization that while I love receiving love from them, I don't need it. That all of the love I long for and need in Christ I already possess. Mm-hmm. Now, what that does is it actually frees me to sacrificially love them, even if I can't guarantee that they're going to love me back. Mm-hmm. Because everything I need in Christ I already possess, now I can actually, I'm actually free to take bigger risks with my life because I don't need a return on my investment. That empowers me to leave it all on the field, to take bigger risks, to say crazy counterintuitive stuff like to live as Christ, to die as gain. It frees me to live my life, you know, going to the back instead of trying to get to the front. Because Jesus succeeded for me, I'm free to fail. Because he won for me, I'm free to lose. Because he was extraordinary, I'm free to be ordinary. I mean, it's the gospel liberates, and that's what Jesus said in Luke chapter 4. I have come, he gives his mission statement in Luke 4 when he's reading Isaiah in the temple, and he says, I've come to set the captives free. That's what I've come to do, to free you from sin and death, from the pressure to perform, from the burden of trying to make something of yourself and validate your existence and justify who you are and all those things Jesus came to do for us what we could never do for ourselves. And that changes everything.